Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
It is 2020, and we are now in the future of EB5. And a lot of people are asking if we think the EB5 program is going to go back to where it was before, including the old targeted employment area designations and the previous investment amounts. And I've seen a few of these questions. Mona, Rebecca, I know you have seen many more. So we would love to get your take. And let me start by saying Happy New Year.
Well, Happy New Year to you, Mark. Yes, hindsight 2020 or regression 2020, whatever you want to call it, it's welcome to the new EB5. Well, just as a quick recap, I think, just for those who have short memories or who ate too much over the holidays.
Are you looking at me?
welcome to the new EB5, so to speak. The EB5 modernization regulation took effect on November the 21st, 2019, and that feels like such a long time ago now. Really, it was just a few simple changes, but these changes have had significant consequences. EB5 usage will certainly be different now, especially as the price tag is more than double what it used to be, and that urban TEAs are more limited. There's no longer a deadline right now, so no rush, but there's a lot to discuss.
Mm-hmm. We have seen the, as you said, Mark, it's no longer 500,000. So for those, you know, sorry if you missed the deadline, but it is targeted employment areas 900,000 and your non-TEAs are at 1.8 million and will be adjusted again based on inflation throughout the years, starting in 2024.
Right. And your I-526, anything filed after November 21st has the different TEA issues. Definitions are more restricted. Process has changed. It's no longer possible to just simply order a TEA designation letter from the state, as we all used to do, and expect USCIS to defer to that letter. It's more of a case-by-case basis, and we'll discuss more shortly.
And then some good news, not just the TEA and the increase, but, you know, it has provided more options. For instance, you can file a new I-526 while also retaining your old priority date or previous filed I-526 petition. And also with removing conditions, we also have seen some improvements on that as well. So we've seen, for instance, if a family member can't file together, you can submit separate applications, which will help the adjudication process along the way.
Yeah, so some simple changes, but as I said, significant consequences.
Yeah. So Mona, we did have a podcast back on December 5th, episode 92. You and I discussed a complaint that was filed by Florida EB5 Investments Regional Center. It was for an injunctive relief and possible temporary restraining order, or TRO, against the Department of State in response to the new regulations. And we also discussed legislation that could change the program. Now that we're all in 2020, are we seeing any movements on either legislation or with the litigation?
Two words, no movement. Oh, I shouldn't laugh. But really, for the last several weeks, the EB5 industry has been anxiously waiting the status resulting from this pending complaint filed in the U.S. District Court of the District of Columbia by the Florida Regional Center, as you mentioned, Rebecca, against USCIS. Really, we did expect to have more out from now, but we haven't heard so much. We know that the judge has ordered further documents to be filed by both parties. Let's see as to what is actually going to materialize. And to make matters more confusing, there's also that pending legislation, which is called the Immigration Investor Program Relief Act. That's 2778, I believe. It's difficult to predict what's going to happen with that. I think that we can say that we will see the bill being passed at some point. We are just not sure when.
And are we seeing any changes to that for any EB5 investors?
Well, it's going to be up for debate to see whether or not we are able to make any changes to that bill. One thing for sure, if the bill does go through, a couple of points. The new legislation decrees the new amounts to be a million, not 900 for a TEA, and a million and one for non-TEA. So there's less of a differential between the TEA and non-TEA, but it's a little higher. And the pending bill does also provide for a 90-day grace period with respect to the enforceability of the new legislation. And what that means is that if an investor would file a 526 petition before the new legislation becomes effective, unless the regulations are stopped by the court or enjoined by the court, then the result would be that the 900,000 amount would be the amount which we move forward to. So, Mark, your initial question, I'm sorry, we do not see it ever, ever going back to 500,000. I think that's it. That's a closed door. From now on, it's 900 and above.
Yeah, that certainly is a great analogy, Mona. It pretty much is a closed door. And I know you and I and other people on this show have talked about knocking on the door, finding different ways to open the door. Maybe we can get somebody else to come to the door and open it for us. But yeah, it doesn't look like that is going to be changing in the near future.
People are worrying about the new regulations and this litigation and, you know, documents that, well, I'll discuss in a moment. A lot of documents are being drafted to reflect the possibility of new regulations coming through. But it's really difficult to, at this point, predict whether or not legislation will go through, whether there will be a temporary restraining order, or the court will actually say that the new regulations are not going to be moving forward. Personally, I don't see it happening. I really feel that if a court does make a decision, it might be to clarify the TEAs, but I don't see that we are going to see anything coming out of the litigation. And as legislation is there, this is 2020, which is an election year. So I'm sort of two minds to see whether we'll have any legislation this year. It could be 2021.
Will we get any clarity, though, Mona? Do you think with the litigation, when would we expect that? Are we looking at a few months? Are we looking at something close by?
Well, the papers have been ordered to be filed, briefs have been ordered to be filed by next month, February. So perhaps by the end of February, perhaps March. So not too far to wait.
Yeah. Well, I know we are all patiently waiting for that to go through, especially when it comes to the TEA, because that, you know, brings us to another issue, projects, trying to figure out what's a TEA versus, you know, what's not a TEA.
All right. Well, it used to be very simple. In the pre-November 21st world, over 90%, which is a lot, of all investments qualified as TEA investments of 500,000, the lower amount. And interestingly, in the regulations, Department of State has estimated from a sample that about 54% of those projects would be impacted by the new TEA regulations. However, this number has been discussed as being a little too conservative, because IIUSA did do a policy research report, and they projected a much higher number, as much as two-thirds of all current projects that would be impacted by the new rules. But what this really means is that the majority of projects would see an investment hike from 500 to 1.8, and that's just out of reach for most investors. So the new rule really does leave a lot of question marks about which investments will qualify at the 900,000 TEA level versus the $1.8 million level. I think what we would ask Department of Homeland Security to provide a specific methodology, because they do not provide a one specific methodology, it allows for more flexibility, but a lot more uncertainty. Now the burden of proof really is now on the investors.
Yeah, and that makes that really difficult, because you can get a TEA designation letter prior to filing, and at least you know that, okay, my project's in a targeted employment area, whereas now you're going to wait for adjudication of the case, and it's going to be years before, you know, whether or not USCIS determines that your calculations or whatever you're using does fall under a TEA. So Mona, if someone does have a project, or you have an existing project in an urban area, how can we satisfy these new criteria?
Well, this is the point. We used to, as I said, it used to be quite simple, and we would effectively get the letter from the state. There are a number of maps which we are seeing out in the market, in the EB5 market. And, you know, it is a good idea to, although people do like to have a look at the map to see whether or not there is an idea, whether or not their project does fall under a TEA, I would not rely on that map alone. Because now that the burden lies with the investor themselves, the best course of action is really to minimize investor risk. And the only way to do that is reliance on a third-party expert. A third-party expert to provide proper evidence of a TEA qualification with good supporting documentation. And that can come in many different forms. But it's worth now going in that route and not certainly just getting a map and saying, okay, this particular map says that this is a TEA. So I would definitely say that the best practice right now for all of our clients and for anybody out there who's wondering about doing a TEA, whether their project falls in a TEA rather, is to get a formal analysis that proves TEA eligibility under the current final rules.
And from our last discussion with IAUSA, as we were on the leadership committee, they did say that they were trying to also put together a best practice committee on TEAs. So it gives us a better idea of how we could go forward, who should we be using for the authority. So I think that would be a great way for us to keep updated as well.
All right. But as a result of all this possible pending legislation, litigation, etc., it's very hard as people like ourselves and other industry experts are doing documents or reviewing or revising documents which are for current projects. We're all taking a precautionary standpoint in these documents and analyzing how to do a deal if the investment amount moves around. But PPMs do need to be revised. And we suggest that they be revised regarding different classes of investors based on different investment amounts. You need to have specific disclaimers. You need to know in advance whether or not this is going to be in TEA and how, since USCIS will not adjudicate that issue until it adjudicates the petitions, how you would proceed further if it should not be a TEA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's important for investors to know, to make sure when they're looking as well, to look at these PPM and to understand, they have to understand that if with this uncertainty that we could potentially come out 2 years from now stating that it's not a TEA.
Right. So this is what we see trending in 2020. Rebecca, first thing I would say we see trending are major RFEs.
Oh, yes, yes. And, you know, I think there's a lot with, especially with the backlogs that are coming out. I mean, we're looking at, luckily, India has come down a bit, but, you know, with China, it was 15 plus years. Regional centers and projects have to remain in existence for these long periods of time. You know, it's no longer that a project is finished and you pay back investors their funds within 2 years. So it's a long time and we see more issues that could be happening. It may or may not be fraudulent. It could be, you know, or misrepresentation. It could be something as innocent. So we have to be aware of all of that that's coming out. Litigation, we're going to see more litigation.
Oh, I think we're going to see a lot more litigation. I think not just litigation, I think mandamus petitions, Rebecca.
Oh, yes, yes. And I think it's because of USCIS, the adjudication times as well. So it's not just litigation against the regional centers or projects, something goes wrong, but it's also against the government for coming out with 2 to 4 year timeline for adjudicating a petition. So of course, these projects have to be out there because USCIS is taking so long to adjudicate.
Well, Mark, we've had a couple of podcasts relating to mandamus petitions and litigation against USCIS. And what we are seeing right now, this is only the beginning of 2020, but we are seeing that many investors want to file lawsuits. And in response, USCIS are coming back quite heavy with heavy-duty RFEs. We're not sure how many of these RFEs would have genuinely been there or how much are bad faith RFEs due to litigation. So, you know, this is all trending in 2020. It's not the most brightest of pictures, actually.
I know. Our clients are looking, look, I've been waiting for 2 years plus. What's going on with my EB-5 application? They're kind of stagnant. If you don't file a mandamus, they're kind of stuck for a few years. But then if you do file a mandamus, you're kind of having USCIS to come out and put this big RFE. Could be multiple pages, not even RFEs. They could come out with NOIDs as well, which, you know, gives you only 30 days to respond. So it becomes a tough decision whether or not we should go ahead and litigate.
Well, I think that practicing in this area is becoming increasingly difficult or stressful at this point because of all of these issues. But in addition, we are also, I think, trending in 2020 will be the issue of redeployment. we're already starting to see so many questions coming up because there are billions, literally billions of dollars of EB-5 money that has to be deployed. Mark, we're going to go into this into greater detail because we have some wonderful guests who are coming back on our show to come and discuss redeployment with us.
Well, that's great because I know redeployment is a common concern among both EB-5 investors as well as project developers.
Right. Well, we're hoping that very soon USCIS will establish some kind of realistic and concrete guidelines for redeployment. If not voluntarily, then as a result of litigation, because there are a lot of investors who are very unhappy with the way this is being handled. Rebecca, what else do we see trending in 2020?
Well, in 2020, we see, which is not new for us, but we have seen the increase of the E2 visas. And this is because of the increase of the investment amount that puts the program out of reach for a large number of investors, because the E2 doesn't require a minimum investment amount. And so you're not required to put in $900,000. But you do have to be careful because it needs to be at least a viable and credible project. And also with the timeline, again, that's putting a lot of people off for if you have to wait X amount of years for your green card. A lot of people are looking at the E2 option. And not only E2, but then you're looking at your E2 to EB-5 option. So there's different ways of coming up with that, getting them into the U.S. a lot faster on the E2 visa, which could take a few months for you to get in.
But remember, though, Rebecca, not everybody can file for the E2. So I think one of the other things that we see trending is the fact that there's a huge increase in applications for Grenada citizenship.
Exactly. And especially because of China and India becoming such, having long periods of backlog, that's where we're seeing a lot of, unfortunately, India and China does not have the E2 treaty with the U.S. So we're seeing a lot of them coming up with, getting the passport through the Grenada program. And, like us, Mona, too, we made sure we went and did our investigation. And although we did get a lot of, oh, really, did you really go to investigate these projects in beautiful Grenada?
Mark, do you know how many people said, they raised their eyebrows at us and said, you're really going there to work? We said, yes.
Especially in the middle of winter in New York.
Yeah.
Well, yes, exactly. We went, what was it, last February? I will kid you not, it rained the entire time we were there.
But that's liquid, not frozen, right?
Yeah. But it's been a great experience. We've met with really good projects out there, Mona, right? And we're meeting more and more.
It's not so straightforward, actually, the Grenada application, because, and we'll discuss this in a later program, Mark, but too many people are getting wrong advice, either in the way they're getting their petition. It depends. If you just want a Grenada citizenship for the passport's sake, it doesn't really matter. But if you're obtaining citizenship of Grenada for, especially to get an E2, then there are certain precautions that you have to take, mainly that you have to show residency. But again, we'll discuss this in a future podcast.
Which would be great. And then, with the amount, the investment amount too in Grenada. So we do have a couple of projects out there where the investment amount got approved for the lower amount at $200,000.
Which is a lot lower than the $360,000 for projects. Yeah.
So it is becoming more and more popular in that respect as well.
Another problem with E2s, Rebecca, is the fact that not everybody is eligible for an E2. Like a young student isn't eligible, or somebody, maybe a housewife who's never had any experience of business is not really eligible.
Yes. We've actually seen a lot of our clients who don't have the experience. And that's what these officers are looking for. When you're going for the interview, they want to know, well, why are you investing here? How do you have the experience to do this? So they do go into your background. You're right, Mona, it's not for everyone. And then you also have to think about, for families who are looking at the E2, but then you have children who may turn 21 soon. The E2 also doesn't allow for children over 21 or over. So it does take time, and you need to figure out what program works best for the family.
Right. So here we are, the start of 2020, Rebecca. Sources tell us that there's more than 70,000 people right now, investors, who are in the EB-5 wheel, one way or the other, either waiting for the 526 or they've got their 526 and they're waiting for visa availability. So the big question for many people currently in this wheel is, when will I receive my green card? when will I receive my B5 visa?
Yes, that's a, you know, the good old visa bulletin comes into play. And there's good news and, of course, not so good news. As we saw for January bulletin, we saw India actually make a significant jump from the December bulletin showed a January 2018 cutoff date. And 1 month later, we're about in January 2020, and we're seeing May of 2018. That's because in our last podcast, too, we did mention this, that the Department of State allocated 11,111 visas to the EB-5 category for fiscal year 2020, which meant that a lot of countries, instead of having your 700 visas, you now have additional visas, which is 778 visas. Which is great, because then that's one of the reasons why India jumped so far. But I do caution on that. Having extra visas is great, but we have to realize whatever countries do not use those visas, those additional visas, unfortunately, they're going to go to China. So because China has dominated the market for so long, those additional visas will end up going to China, because it all depends on your priority date. So China this year is going to see 5,200 EB-5 visas left over and available for China. So that's almost 1,000 visas more than what they saw last year.
Mm. So Rebecca, do explain something, because this is confusing so many people. Let's take India again. In Chart A, India is showing a cutoff date of May 1st, 2018. However, Chart B, India is showing its current. What does that mean?
Okay, so yes, we get this question all the time. So Chart B allows the investor, if your application is approved, you can go ahead and file, either if you're with the consulate, you can go ahead and file your DS-260 with your supporting document and kind of be in line in queue for an interview date once Chart A becomes current. So you're pretty much doing all the legwork beforehand instead of doing it once your priority date becomes current. But the advantage of Chart B is for those who are in the U.S. Now, if you're in the U.S. and you can file for adjustment of status, that gives you the advantage of going ahead and getting your EAD, your employment authorization document, and your advanced parole document within 90 days if you're in the United States. So that helps with a lot of, for instance, our H-1B who may not want to be on H-1B anymore. They might want to change employers. It gives them the advantage of changing employers as they wait for their priority date to become current in Chart A to receive the actual conditional green card.
Right. Well, hasten to say that's just countries which are in backlog, which is not the rest of the world. Right now, the only three countries in backlog, I believe, are Vietnam, China, and India.
Yeah, so
significant backlog, I should say.
Yes, yeah. So India, like I said, we saw the advancement rapidly happening. But like I said, I do err on that because we could potentially see a slowdown. The problem is that USCIS is adjudicating the cases so slow that you're getting one or two approvals at the time. So, of course, their visas are available. But once we continue going and we're getting more and more of those approvals, and especially the fact that we've had such massive filings, you could potentially see when July comes, India slows down and it's not going to, you know, move as quickly. And you could even potentially see, which hope not, knock on wood, even a retrogression until the new set of numbers come out in October for fiscal year 2021. And then unfortunately for Vietnam, they're kind of seeing a limited advancement. So they're pretty much going to move slowly along the way.
Oh, so Rebecca, that brings us to one more trending topic that we have for 2020, and those are the new investor markets, which, of course, we all know the investor markets have been China, Vietnam, India, Taiwan, the Latin countries. But it just seems now that the new countries moving forward could be or would be South Africa, Argentina, Nigeria, Colombia, and you have one which I didn't expect to see on the list.
Oh, yes. Japan actually came up on this list as trending.
Oh, wow. Rebecca, I thought the Japanese loved their country.
So, yes, they do. But we also have seen the immigration has been very strong from Japan, even though it hasn't been strong in the EB-5 category, but it has been increasing. It moved from 78% from 2017 to 2018.
But Japan is the world's largest, it's the third largest economy. And it boasts apparently the second highest number of high net worth individuals. But I believe that one of the reasons that we're seeing all of this is the recent tax reform.
Exactly. You know, a lot of them are wanting to leave just because they have such a high inheritance tax. Whereas it's in the U.S., which is, funnily enough, we have actually one of the lowest inheritance taxes in the world. Japan, you know, they do look out for their children, the children's future. So that's why we're seeing a significant jump in Japanese EB-5 investment.
Well, Mona, Rebecca, thank you so much for jumping into 2020, letting everybody know where we stand right now, your current thoughts on, well, really a lot of topics. I don't want to rehash them all out, but I know that we have a lot more to cover in depth in the year going forward, and I'm excited to do that with you.
Thank you, Mark. We have lots coming up.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. Yeah, we're excited to get going.
Thank you for being with us today on EB-5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB-5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB-5 Investment Voice.